ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What a fake town! Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass. It's a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Let me move my computer. I got it. Blankers is back. The band's back together. Great to have you back, Blankers.
Good to be back.
I got to know, what in the daughter's a fine? She just saw her,
yes.
So I know she's
yes,
fine.
She's fine.
For the sake of the radio audience, we're all good. Blankers was playing daddy yesterday. One of his little ones had a fever, but she's well. She's here. She's
panic
with us today.
Panic mom decided not only to keep her home today, which gave me a handful, but say, you know, maybe she's good for just kind of like the Astros. She's good, but let's keep her home one more day because that would fall right on me.
Don't insult her like that. Don't it's insult true. Her by calling her the Astros. That's a rude thing to say about your daughter.
No, she's not the Astros. It's my wife who's the Astros who decided we'll go one more day.
I'm glad she's feeling well. I'm glad that you are back. Now, I am very curious. What in the world does Pool P9 Pub mean? I have to know.
Did I say that too?
You tweeted this.
This was a decent chunk of our show yesterday.
Yeah, we started off wondering what this was because you mind. Me.
I tweeted it?
You tweeted us in the morning whenever you let text. Us know that you texted us.
Good.
No, please don't
let it go public.
Hold on. You did tweet something else. But you texted us in the morning, hey, not going to make it in. Brian thought you might have been texting too early. I said he's letting us know that he's not going to be at work. He has to text that as soon as he knows.
Right.
So he's totally fine. It's not Bush League at all. We did say your voice to text mistake, which, you know, that happens. Mm-hmm. Then we mentioned how you misspelled sorry, which I don't think was a voice to text mistake, right? That was probably a typo at that point.
Probably.
Yeah, which that happens. But then at 9:49 a.m., you responded to my running back's tweet from the day prior. At 9:49, you responded to my tweet and you said, Pull P9 Pub. What in the world happened here,
now,
Blankers?
We each had theories on what happened here. So
I'm looking for it now.
Right here. Look, do you see it? Like, what is that? What is that?
That's obviously the phone's in my pocket or something. I don't know how that got to that.
See, my theory
was... that was not a conscious effort by me. Look, this is what happens when you're on mom duty with kids. When the whole house is going crazy and you're supposed to keep it all in order, it's not my specialty all the time.
See, it was a mistake.
It was clearly a mistake.
My theory was it was a confirmation code to get you logged into something.
That was not your theory. His theory was that you were at the bar watching Premier League soccer with Glenn Davis.
That was when we started having fun. But
and
when
you
I
fell
was
off
being
the rocker.
Serious, it was a confirmation code they accidentally copied.
I didn't have a good theory. I didn't come up with a good theory.
I don't either, to be honest with you, which is not good because I didn't know I did it.
I love conspiracy theories.
I didn't do it.
I love a good conspiracy theory. You know, Uncle Barney always, he butt dials me a lot.
Uh-huh.
In fact, he actually butt FaceTimes me a lot. I'll answer and it's like, it's usually the FaceTime audio though. Like it doesn't actually connect to the thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I can hear his conversation with like, you know, students or whatever. I'm like, okay, Uncle Barney.
Sat on the phone.
He butt dialed me again. Yeah. So I thought this was more like a butt tweet.
Yeah,
I think that's what it was.
I think it must have been. Because I'm thinking, like, at 9:42, I am walking a rescue dog after being at the gym before I have to get back into full Mr. Mom duty. So it had to be just in my pocket or something like that. And
it was just, like, open.
Yeah.
I'll do that every now and then. Where like I don't do the auto lock. I have it like on a 5 minute timer because I hate it whenever I have it open and I want to keep it open and it locks like in 30 seconds or a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So I have my auto lock at 5 minutes. So sometimes I'll forget to lock it and I'll put it in my pocket.
Right.
And like it'll do some things on my phone. So that's kind of what I thought it would happen. So can you put to rest a few conspiracies
sure.
on what Pool P9 Pub is?
Yes.
Were you or were you not at the pub at 9:49 a.m. with Glenn Davis?
That was not true. False.
Okay. Yes. Can you confirm or deny that it's not a confirmation code, P9 Pub?
It was not a confirmation code.
Okay. Any other conspiracies that you had that we need him to confirm or deny? You didn't fall off the rocker.
No.
You're still okay.
Still drives
the
boat.
All right. Well.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how that happened, but that's a little worrisome. But it kind of, like I said, was more of an explanation of how the day was going.
Yeah. All right. So good. We can put that to rest. It was just, it was in the pocket. Keith on Twitch, or on YouTube rather, said, we need answers, Blankers.
I'm here for you.
We gave you all the answers. Unfortunately, they were just all very boring answers.
Yes.
I'm not satisfied with the answers.
Sometimes the truth is extremely
boring.
I liked
yours, though. I mean, that makes a lot of sense because a lot of times because there's a lot of people that are always trying to hack into your email accounts, and they want you to change your password, and they always, the computer always gives you the one they recommend. And then to kind of sync it up with your phone, you got to cut and paste, copy it, and then use it for both. It's actually a very good theory.
Yeah. So,
as someone who watches a lot of true crime documentaries with YouTubers and Twitchers and TikTokers all weighing in with their theories, I was hoping for some elaborate scheme here that we could cook up.
Yeah.
The simple, easy answer was disappointing.
Yeah. Well. Greg says, J-Bone, you thought he was messing with y'all to make y'all think about it for the show. No, I didn't. I didn't think that.
I wouldn't.
In fact, I said the opposite. I said that Plankers is not intellectually capable of doing that.
Oh, that's,
no offense.
Yeah.
I think a texter brought that up as a possibility, but we both dismissed it.
Yeah. I didn't say intellectually capable. I think creativity capable.
I can find the tape, probably.
I think it was creative. But whatever. I was just burning Blankers for the fun of it because he wasn't here, and that's what I like to do whenever he's not here. Mm-hmm. But anyways, Astros lost a baseball game yesterday. Let's get into the important stuff, I guess. I guess this is important. Astros lose 7-2. Look, you're not going to win baseball games, very many of them, when you fall behind 5-0 unless Blair Henley's on the mound. That was actually 5-2. If you're not going to win many baseball games when you fall down 5-0. You're not going to win many baseball games when you only score 2 runs. Astros are 10 games under 500. This is awful. This is no fun.
It's hard to digest because of the fact that you're right. I mean, it used to be that you'd settle in to watch a baseball game and know, hey, man, you're going to have entertaining baseball to watch for an entire evening, and it's going to be fun to kind of relax and watch the game. And an inning in, you're ready to turn it off. And I don't care if you're J.P. France, and yes, you can bitch all you want about the 2 calls you didn't get, but if it leads to you giving up another bomb, you still gave up the first one to Bellinger, which was an absolute just, you know, airline shot. And then you gave up another one. And, you know, and this team just doesn't seem like it's got a whole lot of fight either, because the minute that it happened, when you started looking at the body language, it's like, oh, my God, they're done. They look like they're cooked and we're only in the first inning. But it's because of the way things have been going lately. It just seems like it's getting worse.
Yeah, it's they're pressing. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And it is bad ball. Like, that stuff I don't think is something you can argue. They're pressing. Are they playing good baseball? Absolutely not. They're playing poor. A couple of the takeaways that I had from this, I think that we need to have a real fair, honest conversation when it comes to J.P. France. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that J.P. France is a Major League Baseball pitcher. Like, I know that J.P. France had he's a great story. He's married to MTV Jess, reality star. It's fun to root for him. He looks funny with the mustache and the glasses, and it's like, oh, yay, cool. The Astros have this pitcher that looks funny. He's got a thing. He pitched well at the start of last season, too, when you needed him, right? Like, he was solid whenever you needed somebody to come up from AAA and to be solid. And he pitched solid, so he curried favor from a lot of Astro fans. He has been getting absolutely shelled this year. Yesterday, he fell to 0-3 with a 7.46 ERA. That is abysmal. That is not major league worthy. Well, it's a small sample size, Branham. You can't look at just, you know, 5 starts and 25 innings. Okay, that's fair. I will concede that. Let's look at his full body of work in the bigs. And Brian would even go to the minors, where he's been pretty pedestrian for a minor leaguer. His last 2 years with the Houston Astros, in 29 games, 28 starts, he's got a 4.40 ERA. Like, at best, J.P. France is a 5 starter, or he's a mop-up guy in the bullpen. At best.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it was he came onto the scene last year. Not a lot of teams had a whole lot of intel on him or enough, and normally that's advantage pitcher when you get a pitcher new in the major leagues. That until guys get to see tendencies and a lot of video and things like that, and he got rolling. And then once he got rolling, he kept it going and he had momentum. It's all gone now. And it's to the point where I was sitting there looking at it last night going, can this guy get 3 outs in 1 inning if he just gives his best stuff, empties the tank? Because his fastball was low 90s most of the night. He got it when he got upset with the umpire. He got it to 94 and 95, I think, on 2 pitches. But other than that, his velocity was down on his fastball. It's not overpowering regardless. Mm-mm. And he hangs a whole lot of breaking pitches. And you're looking at it and comparing it to guys that are currently in the bullpen going, is he better than Seth Martinez? Right now, no. The answer is no, he's not. So then you start looking at some of the other guys, the Scots, the other guys that they've been using in the middle going, can he at least get 3 outs in an inning in the middle of a baseball game when you need to get major league hitters out? If you think that the answer is yes, which I still think he can, then maybe there's a role for him in the bullpen. But other than that, he's got to figure some stuff out, and they don't have as much wiggle room as they think they do to just keep throwing guys out there going, maybe this next turn he'll be better.
Yeah, his, well, I mean, there because of attrition, you really don't have a whole lot of choice right now. Right. Now, maybe it's a different story in 2 to 3 weeks. His stuff also doesn't play in the bullpen, I don't think. Like, it's not the Hunter Brown where his stuff is, you know, he's got good stuff, which I'm kind of just, like, disgusted with Hunter Brown right now. But Hunter Brown's got stuff that you think could play in the bullpen. J.P. France, like you mentioned, low 90s fastball. Maybe he touches 95. His secondary stuff is average at best. His stuff doesn't really translate to the pen. Whatever, like, is he a better middle reliever than Seth Martinez? No. Taylor Scott's been impressive, actually. Got a little bit of command issues yesterday. Allowed a run. It was unearned, blah, 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 blah. But Taylor Scott, like, okay, his stuff kind of, like, is correlates better with a reliever than a J.P. France. I think J.P. France would be more like the Brandon Belak replacement, where you have a guy who needs to be an emergency starter. You need a guy to mop up three innings whenever you're up by seven or down by five. Like, that's kind of his role. And maybe best case scenario, he's a number five starter. Best case scenario, number five starter. But I think that's his range. His range is at best number five starter, likely a mop up reliever in the bigs. / 4A pitcher. Like, we have to have that fair and honest conversation with J.P. France. Whenever we talk about the Astros using, what is it, 22, 23 pitchers already this season, and a lot of those guys have been fringe big leaguers, you can throw J.P. France into that pool as one of the pitchers that they've been forced to use that is a fringe big leaguer. Yeah. I'm not looking at J.P. France as a staple in the Houston Astros rotation for 5 years down the road, 3 years down the road, 3 weeks down the road.
Well, and we had talked about it. The possibility of using him as trade bait in the offseason, not knowing that this was going to happen. But he's basically reversed roles with Blanco, because Blanco was a guy that you were looking at going, hey, he's a 4A starter. Could he be a guy, because he has an above-average fastball, that he could get guys out in one inning coming in relief, and maybe that's where he kind of, you know, transitions to once they get through this little bump in the road with starting pitching. But now he is a premier pitcher that is going to be counted on for this entire season and more, and they've completely reversed roles to now you're looking at J.P. France as a potential 4A lifetime Sugarland pitcher, or, you know, AAA pitcher with somebody. And if he's going to be useful at all, he's going to be in a one inning stint where he comes in, gets three guys out, and then goes and sits his butt on the bench as quickly as possible, you know, with a deep sigh of relief that he got guys out, because his stuff isn't as good as some of the guys we've been talking about.
Yeah, Ronel Blanco has certainly jumped him. Ronel Blanco has jumped him by a mile. I would push back on what you said, that I don't think he's a one-inning reliever. I don't think he's a one-inning middle reliever. I think he's a mop-up guy. I think he's a multi-inning mop-up guy that is saving the bullpen when you're up by 100 or you're down by 100. Isn't plus 10, just, minus 10.
Isn't he just kind of bad Jose Urquidy at this point?
Yeah, he's Brandon Belak. He's Brandon Belak.
He's maybe
a better version than Brandon Belak.
I don't mind him, like you said, mop-up guy. The game gets out of hand. You have him come in and throw three.
Emergency starter.
But I think, given health, you know, given they have options, because right now they don't really have a lot of options, I think I'm out on J.P. France as being anything more than just a long reliever mop-up type guy.
I honestly think that he can get through an inning out of the bullpen.
Listen to what you just said, though.
Like, you think?
I'm not saying that, like, I agree with you. Like, I'm just saying, like, listen to this sad state of affairs that we're currently in. I think that he maybe could give you three outs in the sixth. Like, that doesn't really, like, excite me. That's not something like, okay, if that's, like, where we're at in the middle innings for the Houston Astros, yay, this is a playoff team. The middle relief has actually surprised me. Like, the Astros' pitching problems aren't so much the middle relief. It's using a bunch of fringe guys because of injuries. The big three have been awful. Bray's been the best of the big three, and he's been a disappointment. Presley's been awful. Hader's been awful. Seth Martinez and Taylor Scott, to me, if I'm looking at the pitching staff, have been the biggest positive surprises that they've had so far through 28 games.
Yeah, aside from what Blanco's done that no one saw coming, these are the guys that you didn't expect anything from, or minimally expected just very little from, that have really stepped up for you. You look at it, I think, Brian, to your point, I think that because of the track record of Urquidy over several years, I think Urquidy, if he comes back, if he's just who he is, I think he's fully capable of being your five. And I would trust him a hell of a lot more than I would a J.P. France for a little bit over a half a season that was able to kind of take the American League by storm, be effective for the team. But now it looks like the doors, the wheels, and the engine are all falling off at the same time. And they're not in a position where they can take any chances or just, you know, see if he can figure it out and work with him, because of how big of a hole they've dug for themselves.
I think, kind of going off the points you guys have made, I think we just have to be willing to admit that he caught lightning in a bottle. But sometimes that's all it is. Sometimes it's just lightning in a bottle. He came up as a 28-year-old prospect, not even really a prospect at all. If you're a prospect, you're up by age 24.
He outgrew that word, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he's not even a prospect. He comes up kind of an emergency situation, and the league doesn't have any tape on him. So for about, I think it was about eight starts, he was pretty solid. But then after those eight starts, second half of his time up in the big leagues last year, the numbers started trending downwards, and he's been awful this year. I think he's a 4A player, and it's not just him. We can go through the entire list of this roster, and it's really the failure of the offseason. The fact that the Astros front office just basically signed off on running a bunch of guys like Kessinger and Singleton, Belak, Dubin, Mashinsky, J.P. France, all these guys that we intellectually know they're 4A players, mm-hmm. and they just signed off on, hey, this is good enough. Even though they're a team that says they have World Series aspirations, those types of moves and signing off on 4A players, that many 4A players being a big part of the roster, to me isn't a sign that you're serious.
Yeah. I agree 100%.
I agree, too.
I said 24 games, by the way. I said 28. 24 games.
There's a whole lot of people that got to do a whole lot of more than just looking in the mirror right now. They've got to start really taking ownership of what their job is and trying to do it better. And that starts with the owner and with the general manager and then with everybody right down through that clubhouse. Every player, every bench player, everybody. Because this team is too good, and there's still guys that are doing better than average in the Major League Baseball and having good seasons in the case of Yordan and Altuve and some of the guys offensively that we know are going to be mainstays in this lineup, for them to be 10 games under 500. I looked at that number last night just in the postgame show, just shaking my head going, I know I said if they were 10 games out, but it's embarrassing as hell to know that this team is 10 games under 500.
Yeah, it is.
They haven't won since Verlander started.
They've played bad.
They might not win again until he throws again.
It might be win with Verlander and then lose four. Win with Verlander, then lose four.
Other thoughts you had? Go ahead.
Did you hear Julia last night?
That was the one.
That was the one interesting and positive for me. Fromber may pitch in Mexico City.
Yeah. Yes. The Javier thing was kind of encouraging, too.
Yep.
Like, hey, it's just the neck thing. It's like he's probably going to be fine. Now, Dana Brown was on with QB1 earlier this morning on the cardiac arrest. He said a couple of starters when they returned from Mexico. So, like, we can dive into that. Like, was he talking about Fromber and Javier, or was he talking about Urquidy and Javier, and they're going to get Fromber back in Mexico?
Wait, say that again. So, Dana Brown expects to get a couple with Sean today.
Yeah, yep. Like, because there's, like, Julia in the dugout, when she did the dugout report, like, she said that Fromber's trending back, and it's, like, lining up for Mexico. Mm-hmm. Like, they made it seem like he's going to pitch in one of the two games in Mexico, right, mm-hmm. against Colorado. Dana Brown said this morning on the cardiac arrest that he anticipates to get two starters back when they return from Mexico. So is that one of those is obviously Javier.
Right.
But is he talking about Fromber and Javier, or is he talking about Javier and Urquidy because Fromber's pitching in Mexico? Like, that's the thing that I couldn't quite put together.
I hope it's the possibility of getting three starters back into the rotation.
Yeah.
Just because of the fact that what we've seen is hard to stomach any further into the season.
I just don't know if Urquidy's that close.
Didn't they say late last week that he and Garcia were throwing mound sessions?
He was thrown off a mound, but Urquidy's also going to be a guy who I think is going to get a rehab because he hadn't pitched
probably
forever.
Right. Probably
so, like,
right.
I think it's Fromber. I think when Dana Brown said this morning on the Highway to Hell, or not the Highway to Hell, the cardiac arrest, that when he said we're going to get two starters back when we return from Mexico, I think he meant Fromber and Javier.
Do you think that's because they don't want Fromber in Mexico because of the altitude?
I've heard a lot of people say that.
Yeah.
I think that is silly logic. Like, let's not pitch our better pitcher and pitch a lesser pitcher because of altitude in Mexico City. What are we doing here? Are you trying to win the game, or are you trying to protect your best pitcher? I'm throwing the best guy.
Okay, but then I throw in the reason, because I would agree with you as well, especially right now. All wins are important wins. You got to go get every one you can, especially against lesser thans. But if he doesn't have his A game and he gets roughed up, we know psychologically between the ears it's a bigger deal than most with any other player on this roster or maybe in baseball, that they're worried about building his confidence back up too. I don't know. But to me, you would think that he wants to be in that environment, national TV setting probably, go in there, show out, beat a bad team, and basically let everybody know, I'm back, we're going
to
be fine.
I mean, wouldn't beating up on a bad Rockies team be a good way to get your confidence back?
But the altitude, if he hangs a lot of breaking pitches.
I get that. But
that's kind of a defeatist mentality.
But if Fromber's...
Sounds like that's what they got going right now.
I don't disagree.
If Fromber's supposed to be the guy we think he is, he's a ground ball pitcher, wouldn't you want the ground ball guy in elevation?
Yes. The answer, yes.
I mean, it seems like completely backwards logic to say Absolutely. Keep Fromber out of Mexico City. You want the ground ball guy there.
Yeah, let's go throw a lesser pitcher who might be more prone to fly balls as opposed to the guy who's our best ground ball pitcher and maybe one of the best pitchers we have on our pitching staff. That's to me, that's terrible logic. Now, they haven't done that yet, so like we're critiquing a move that they haven't made. But the sense that I got with Dana Brown saying that was we're going to get two starters back after Mexico City. I don't think Urquidy's there yet. I think he's talking about Fromber and Javier. So I hope that Julie was right. And like they certainly like alluded to the fact that it's lining up for Fromber to pitch in Colorado. Mm-hmm. The way I heard Dana this morning, it sounded a little different. So like I'm on the fence on that, and we don't know yet. It's unknown. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What else did you take away from that game yesterday? 713-780-3776. Twitch.tv/ESPN975, our best friends. Also on YouTube at ESPN Houston, you can find us there as well. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Also, whenever we come back, we've heard over and over that Espada is this progressive manager. I haven't seen this. Can someone explain to me the progressive manager that Joe Espada is? Have we seen that so far through 24 games? Explain it to me like I'm 2 years old. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from a good friend, Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. If you don't know what that is, but you're losing your hair, you've got pattern baldness, thinning, or just flat out you've lost your hair, and you think there's nothing you can do about it, that's why you need to know about the NeoGraft. The NeoGraft is a game changer because it's your own hair, and you get it back where you need it most. The troublesome areas. Maybe it's your forehead is become an 8-head. Maybe you got that baboon's butt on the top of your dome and you don't think there's anything that can cover it up. Well, the NeoGraft can. And basically, all you need to do is get the information to see if it might be right for you. All I'm encouraging you to do is go to 975hair.com. There's a whole bunch of information there, and you can get a free consultation with Doc and his staff just by going to 975hair.com and signing up. Nothing that you have to pay for out of pocket. No signing on the dotted line or commitment. Just you getting all the information, getting an appointment with them, asking questions, getting answers, them explaining the procedure, and you deciding if it's right for you. It was right for me, and I can't stop telling people how great it was because I've seen the results. I've got my hair back. I've got my hairline back. I've got confidence. And when I don't wear a hat and we're out in public, we're making appearances, people notice. And that's the biggest deal. You're going to get yourself confidence back because you're going to like the way you look again. Go to 975hair.com. Right now, sign up for your first year consultation. It's free. It's $150 for people off the street. You listen to us, you go to him, you get that deal, and then let the process go from there. Get the information, ask the questions, get the answers, and if it's right for you, you'll be glad you went to Doc because he's the best in the business. Doc Linville, 975hair.com.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. Thoughts on the Astros game yesterday. Please explain to me the progressiveness that we've seen from Joe Espada. I just don't see it. I put on a new pot of coffee, too, by the way. I haven't eaten. I'm about to be caffeinated. I'm going to be spicy today, I feel like. Someone texted us a picture of a hat, and the inside of their hat, it says Killer Bees.
Really?
Yeah, I wonder what the what hat is that? You see, it says it's like the lining on the inside of the hat.
Oh, like the new era has new era right there.
I wonder what hat that is, though.
It was. I would assume back in the heyday of the Astros.
Oh, you think it's an Astros hat?
I think it's probably the old brick red Astros hat with maybe the Killer Bees.
Maybe. Yeah, let us know what's on the front of that hat. I'm curious. 713-780-ESPN-4488. I think the team offense lacks energy / fire because they have no faith the pitching will keep it close. I mean, when you're staring down a 5-0 deficit, I think there's something to that. It might not be the case every single game. When you're down 5-0 after one, I think that is a reasonable take.
Yeah, it is. I think this is kind of uncharted waters for the majority of this roster, with the exception of Altuve and you know, very few others that had endured all of the losing of the Astros prior to this golden era, to where they just expect to win. I mean, they found a way to feel in their comfort zone is winning baseball games and being dominant. And now all of a sudden, 10 games under 500, they all got to start looking at themselves, looking at others. And you know, I don't... Evidently, JV's, you know, get your head out of your rear end speech didn't go very far.
Well, it worked for a game.
For one game, and it happened to be the game that he pitched. So now, what are we going to do with the rest of the 162? I mean, you're going to have to figure out a way where guys are going to hold themselves and others accountable. And like I said, that's not just the clubhouse. Joe Espada, it's a great question. I don't think that Joe Espada, as we talked about the other day, is a guy that everybody should be pointing fingers at as the scapegoat, the low-hanging fruit, that he should be blamed. But at the same time, he's a guy that's going to have to, if he has to be, kind of a motivational rah-rah guy, but he's got to pull this group together and try to collectively get all their heads out of their butts.
Yeah. I don't want to ever see Jake Meyers ride the pine if there's a lefty on the mound. Jake Meyers hits left-handed pitching. Jake Meyers should be in the starting lineup every single time. Every single time there's a lefty on the mound, Jake Meyers should be in the lineup. Now, counterpoint to this is, well, Chaz hits lefties well. Well, Mauricio Dubon hits lefties well. Not to be the guy that says, I told you so. This is why we wanted a left-handed bat in the offseason that could play either corner outfield spot and play a little bit of first base. We saw this as a weakness, and it's starting to show up. But Jake Meyers should play every single time there's a lefty on the mound. If you're going to sit Jake Meyers, which is fine. You know, he's not an everyday guy as much as they want to tell you he's an everyday guy. It should be against righties. He needs to be in the lineup every single game against lefties. He hits lefties well. He always has. And with his defense, this is when you should get him on the field.
He's not a liability defensively. If that is the one area where he can excel, this team is looking for any areas where they can find guys that can excel. Put him in there and ride with him until he shows you otherwise. Because at least, again, in the situations that you painted, he doesn't come up there looking like a deer in the headlights. It looks like he's got a plan. It looks like he puts the barrel to the baseball, and he can be effective for you. This also frees up Dubon if you have to move Dubon around and all the different things that you may need to do in getting more than creative, filling out this lineup card to make sure that you can put an offense on the field that might be able to catch up and overtake bad pitching. Yeah. Because you can't get enough of bad pitching right now.
No, he should be in the lineup every time against lefties. In Fuentes, yes, there's only room for one JP France per team. Mop up garbage time merchant. I agree with that. Only other thing I'll take away from yesterday's game, Jose Abreu should be in the starting lineup today. Jose Abreu had his best day at the plate yesterday. Yes, he was 0-for-3, but he didn't strike out once. That's encouraging. And he also hit two line shots, and he got robbed of hits.
Was it Bush at first base that made the play where he was almost playing second base?
Yeah. Was that the one he dove or the other one he just caught?
He dove.
Yeah.
He dove.
Twice line outs.
You looked at it, and you're like, man, that's just when a guy's scuffling, the baseball gods say, yeah, that should have been a hit.
Which, I mean, we're going to make fun of Jose Abreu and his 0-65 batting average, which if you and I had a beer and a half, our BAC is equal to Jose Abreu's batting average. But if they're like trying to figure out what Jose Abreu is, they're giving him one last gasp to see if he can like get out of this skid. You don't bench him after he squared up two baseballs. Like Joe Espada needs to have Jose Abreu in the lineup today. If Jose Abreu's not in the lineup today, I'm going to be irrationally mad at Joe Espada for not playing Jose Abreu. This is the only time all season I'm going to bang the drum saying that Jose Abreu should be in the lineup. John Singleton's not much of an upgrade. There's a righty on the mound, Jamison Tyon, shout out the Woodlands High School. He's pitching tonight. Singleton's not good against righties. He's better against lefties. Abreu had a good day at the plate yesterday. Yes, he was 0-for-3, but he finally hit the ball hard. He barreled up two baseballs. He had an exit velo of one of them over 100 miles per hour. So if we're not willing to release Jose Abreu and we're still trying to get Jose Abreu to come out of this skid, you don't bench him the day after he has squared up two baseballs.
No.
Jose Abreu should absolutely be in the lineup today. And if he's not, I'm going to bang on Joe Espada.
This is like the Jake Meyers situation you just talked about. This is like at this point in the season with how grossly you have underperformed, you are looking for any glimpse of hope and any glimmer of something that you can capitalize on so that your team might start turning it around. Maybe it's a guy turning it around. Maybe it's multiple guys doing something that can get guys going in the right direction. He's in Chicago. That's his comfort zone for the majority of his career. You know, you know that Bagwell and all these guys are going to go right now, hey, we are hoping for any glimmer that says this guy's going to start feeling good at the plate again and get the kind of the self-inflicted wounds at least out of his head so that he can just worry about hitting a baseball again. He damn well better be in the lineup because you can't pull a Dusty. I used to get on Dusty if a guy was hot and he decided it was his scheduled day off. This is much worse. This is a guy that we've been the most scrutinized poster child for this underachieving Astros ball club. And if he at least barreled up two baseballs last night, you need to see if that can continue because basically your ownership and everybody else is sure as hell telling you that he's not going anywhere right now, so you damn well better hope that he can figure out something real quick.
I love the fact that Jose Abreu barreling up two baseballs is hot, but I agree with you. I agree with you. That's just where we are with Jose Abreu. But you either you DFA or Jose Abreu, or you play Jose Abreu after he looked okay at the plate. If he's going to take up a roster spot, then he needs to be in the lineup a day after he actually barreled up some baseballs. Now, if he was 0-for-3 with three strikeouts yesterday, yeah, move on. If he was 0-for-3 for three strikeouts yesterday, DFA the guy.
Right.
But if you're hell-bent on keeping him on the roster, he was 0-for-3, three strikeouts, okay, play Singleton there. Texter said, is it a Dubon at first base a terrible idea? Not for us. We love that idea. But if he's going to barrel up a couple of baseballs, he's going to take up one of your 26 roster spots. You are trying to get something out of Jose Abreu because you're unwilling to cut him and eat the cost, then he 100% should be in the lineup the day after he looked somewhat okay at the plate. I don't care that he was hitless in the hit column.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, as we've talked about throughout sports and throughout us doing this show, we may not agree with it, but the stubborn hard-headedness of the guys that make deals and sign checks is always going to be that there's one last glimmer of hope. We're always going to hang on till the bitter end if there's someone that we sign, especially if we extended as an organization money and years to a guy to perform, or drafted in a lot of cases too. High draft picks get way more opportunities and looks than just the average everyday player because of the fact that someone's reputation and possibly their job is always riding on the line. And general managers are going to roll with the guys that they brought in, or ownership in this case too. So they want him to be there. They want him to figure this out. They need him in a lot of ways to figure this out because of the scrutiny that they face on a daily basis. Yeah, it ain't a whole lot to hang your hat on to say, well, he barreled up a couple of baseballs. Yay, team. But it's a whole lot better right. than he's been doing. So the last thing you need to do is let him cool off and not cool be off. Able to try and keep it rolling cool somehow.
The phrazing yeah. there is amazing. Yeah,
it's crazy, but it's true.
065. Cool off from cool off.
3.
But it's true, though. Like if you're
true.
Going to keep him on this roster, he has to start games after he actually barreled up some baseballs. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Sean, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Sean?
Yes, sir. Normally, I just sit around and yell at the radio, but you guys dropped a couple buzzwords on me that I had to pick up the phone. I listen or I watch MLB Central every morning, and DeRosa and some of the other talking heads, and you guys just mentioned that the Astros, you know, need to go into Mexico and beat up on one of the less than teams. It may be the fact that the Astros are one of the less than teams this year. Just because of the fact over the last 7 years, I don't think there's a club in baseball that's played more games than them. They may just be worn out and tired. So, anyway, that's it. After that, I'll just hang up and listen, guys. Appreciate your time.
I think if Jose Abreu is one thing, right? But Jose Altuve is not pulling a Jose Abreu. Yordan Alvarez is not pulling a Jose Abreu. You see guys that are still putting bat to baseball, that are being productive members of this lineup. Other guys like Tucker that continue to keep doing things to show you he's going to be who he has been over the last couple of years. You've got guys that are capable to where if they were tired, if they were worn out, they probably wouldn't be putting up the numbers they're putting up. So there's too many signs to say this team is too talented. And to, you know, just to counter Sean, no matter what anybody says, if they're not watching this team on a daily basis and they don't know how many injuries and how many guys that they've lost, it's pretty simple to say if they had any semblance of starting pitching at all, that a whole lot of things would change in the positive direction. One, you wouldn't be down 5-7 runs in the first two innings of a lot of the games you played already. Two, the guys that don't make the rotation would now be able to strengthen your relief pitching, which has been taxed to the limit because of your less than. And you assume the three guys at the back of the bullpen are going to figure it out.
Yeah, this argument actually drives me crazy.
And it's come up multiple times recently.
Yeah, I heard Dana Brown said it today with QB1. I lost my mind. And, Sean, I agree with your first point about, like, you know, beat up on the lesser teams. Is it, you know, possible that the Astros are one of those lesser teams? The record says that it is, and you are what your record is. The Major League Baseball teams, minus postseason, yes, you go into the postseason, you play an extra month. They play 6 months out of the year. If you make the postseason, you're playing 7 months out of the year. And they're playing baseball. Like, I understand that the grind of travel is tough. That wears on you. I get that. I understand that they're, I guess, playing a professional. This isn't football. It's not basketball. Like, they're playing baseball. Baseball is one of the less taxing professional sports that exist. The idea that they're fatigued 24 games into the 2024 season is one of the worst takes that I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's frankly laughable because, as Joel pointed out in his response, I mean, Altuve's still hitting well. There's the good, basically the good players are still playing well. The bad players aren't playing well, and you've got a lot of injuries that have caused even more bad players to have to get playing time. Yeah, I don't buy it, especially coming off a season where they actually had their longest offseason in years. I mean, they didn't play in the World Series. There wasn't a World Baseball Classic. Right. A lot of these players who could be tired, if we're going with that line of logic, by a shorter offseason, they actually had their longest offseason in years.
And here's the other thing that actually grinds my gears, too. With the amount of people that are making exorbitant amounts of money to make minimal things happen, middle positive effects on a baseball team. They have sleep analysts. They have planes. They have these private planes that allow these guys to sleep in comfort, almost like they're in their own bed when they're on an airplane. They have dietitians. They're getting all the food that they need, and they are getting pampered head and foot. It is not like even being on the road is an excuse, especially 24 games in.
Yeah. I mean, and then why is this year the straw that broke the camel's back? Why weren't they tired in 18 after going to the World Series for the first time? Why weren't they tired in 19 after making the playoffs for the second year in a row? 2023 playoff appearances in a row. 2021, four playoff appearances. 2022, they had five playoff appearances in a row, and then they won the World Series. Why weren't they tired last year when they went all the way to Game 7 of the ALCS? Why is it year 2024 that they're finally getting this fatigue and tiredness? And you're right, like the guy who's been here throughout, Altuve, is off to a great start. The Astros don't suck because they're tired and have had deep playoff runs in the last 7 years. They suck because they're currently not hitting with runners in scoring position. They suck because there's a lot of pitchers that have pitched key innings that are fringe Major League Baseball players. They suck for, you know, maybe their middle relief is actually better than I thought. The guys that you were counting on to be very good have not been. Alex Bregman's been dreadful. Jose Abreu, you weren't counting on him to be good, but you're paying him like he should be good, $19.5 million. Josh Hader, you thought was going to be good, is not. Ryan Presley's supposed to be good, is not. Brian Abreu got off to a slow start. Those are the reasons you suck. You don't suck because they're tired after seven straight postseason appearances, 24 games into the 2024 season. And Dana Brown's, and I know that it sounds like I'm directing this to the caller, Sean. This is actually directed to Dana Brown when he went and used that as an excuse this morning. That is a poor excuse.
The injuries need to factor in as well, too, because when you start thinking about the fact that we have mentioned multiple times, the injured pitchers that are on the injured list right now are good enough to be one of the best starting rotations in baseball. And you look at it and say, you knew the guys that were going to be out till midseason. But what you didn't expect was Verlander to not get off to be able to start the opener and be ready for the first game, then to lose Javier after losing Fromber and lose the top three starters in your rotation, that could screw just about anybody up on top of everything that you mentioned, which is why at least there's hope for the long haul for this season to say, hey, there is cavalry coming. There is help that can get this ship righted. But in the meantime, don't tell me that they're exhausted.
Yeah,
no, it's just a terrible excuse. I mean, you look up and down the stat page. Jose Altuve's got an OPS over 1,000. Tucker's over 900. Alvarez and Pena are over 800. There are guys having good seasons. The reason this team is losing is they've had starting pitching injuries. They've got a couple players like Jose Abreu and Alex Bregman who sucked, and the front office didn't do their job in getting the sort of depth they needed to overcome some of these injuries and poor performing players. And Dana Brown, frankly, by going on their flagship and saying, oh, well, they're tired, just frankly comes off to me as saying it's not my fault, passing the buck. Yeah. Oh, they're too tired, so it can't be my fault. Well, maybe if you gave them some depth, they could. I mean, Altuve and Yordan still played every game of the season. Maybe you could give guys days off. Maybe you could have someone to step in when someone's slumping, but you didn't do your job in the offseason, and not directing only at Dana Brown, certainly the other members of the front office are to blame as well. But if you've done your job, then maybe you could account for some of those things that have held the team back this year.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776, 3403, not progressive, but better. He, Espada, benched and subbed Abreu more than Dusty did all year. Even if Maldi was here, Diaz would be the starter. Players have to perform. He can just try and put them in best situation. Show me where Joe Espada has been this progressive manager that we thought he would be. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Guys, the word right now for the newest and best golf simulators I've ever been on in Houston, and that is X-Golf and Katy. X-Golf is across the country, but the only X Golf Simulators are right here in Houston in Katy. You can look them up online, X Golf Katy. But once you've been once, if you're a golfer, you're going to go there all the time. You're going to go there when the weather sucks and you can't get your tee time. You're going to go there at night because you know after work you can still find a place where you can hit balls, especially when it's really, really hot in Houston where there's air conditioning, there's great food and beverage. Because honestly, it's the best combination of a super, super sports bar with all the eight golf simulators that are there for your use. And it's just like hitting golf balls at the range, only it's better because there's a shot track on every shot. You can figure out the distance, the spin, the direction, and you can start charting your bag so you know how far you hit every club. The one thing that I really like, because I've seen a lot of simulators where they can do stuff similar, but where they really lack is chipping and putting. Chipping and putting is really, really accurate. The best putting simulators I've seen. And you can hone in on your entire game. You can even use your own golf balls, the brand and the model that you play on a course in the simulator for the entire time you're on it, and then take the balls out, take them back with you, put them in your bag, and use them on the course, and you've been practicing with the same ball you're going to use on the course. Absolutely phenomenal. Chris does a fantastic job of marketing to everything that people want. There's leagues going on. If you want to get into some two-man scrambles and some individual play, you could play 50 courses around the world on the simulators. But I'm telling you, you're going to love it because it's realistic and it's really cool. Check it out today, X Golf Katy. Tell them I sent you by.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Can y'all tell me how Joe Espada is a progressive manager? Hey, look, I fell for this trap when they hired him. He's younger, and maybe I was stereotyping a young guy. Most interesting manager in the world. I can't really say that when they're 7-17. How is he progressive? And don't tell me, well, he bats Jordan second. Mike Trout's been batting second since 2011. Batting the best offensive player on your team in the we're not allowed to say two-hole anymore. Batting him second is not progressive. In what ways, because we were sold that Joe Espada is this progressive manager. He's going to have these new school modern ideas that's going to tap back into the analytics that made the Astros great when Luno was here and Hinch was good at kind of combining the analytics with the old school feel. In what ways has Joe Espada been a progressive manager?
He can bundle your home and car insurance, and he knows flow.
That's pretty good. I like that one.
I mean, the best thing that I can say is that he's not afraid to move Abreu down. He's not afraid to do things that Dusty maybe was concerned being a veteran that he didn't want to do to kind of ruffle the feathers of a veteran player. But other than that, we haven't. I mean, maybe it's because they're not winning and we're not in, you know, key situations enough in tight games to see a more progressive manager. But your point is very valid in the fact that we haven't seen much that's shown, because if there was one way or another, then we wouldn't be making the statement that I made the other day, which was everybody that's clamoring for Dusty right now or any other manager or Joe Espada to be fired. I don't think that there's any other manager in baseball that takes over this team and plays the same games over the first 24 games and tells me that the results are going to be any different.
I know you're trying to do the best you can to prove progression from Joe Espada. And please text in, because I haven't seen this progressiveness from Espada, 713-780-3776. Moving a struggling player down in the lineup isn't progressive to me. That's common sense. This guy is awful. He's hitting .068, or 6.5, actually. Let's move him down in the lineup. That's the progressiveness that we're getting from the Astros manager. Jordan's batting second. Cool. Like, best players on offenses have been batting second since 2010, probably prior to that, quite frankly. I just don't want to go back and look at all of that. Like, where is this, well, Brian Abreu is going to pitch the sixth inning when the middle of the order's due up? And maybe he's handcuffed with Hader, and when Jeremy Booth came on yesterday, and he's like, well, Hader is going to be a ninth inning guy, three out only, so maybe he can't use Hader in the eighth inning whenever you have, you know, 2, 3, 4 coming up, and two of those guys are left-handed. But, like, where is this progressiveness? I thought that we were getting a progressive manager. I haven't seen that. Other than batting Jordan second, nothing has changed. Everything's the same. Everything is the same.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think that, and maybe it is the point that I made about if I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, it's you haven't been in tight ball games, in winning situations in the first 24 games enough to say you would do things differently, or this is how you would do it if you had to execute. And quite honestly, when you look at just the way that he's handled the bullpen, and a lot of it, again, is because they've been taxed. But He's not changing the way that anybody does extra inning games either, because they've been getting their ass handed to him in extra inning games, and they're basically depleted on pitching by the time they get there. So I think the only thing that you could say that shows that he was trying to be more progressive is Yordan moving up and Abreu moving down.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. Have you seen this progressiveness? Brian, do you have anything? Have you seen any progressiveness from the Astros manager like we thought we were going to get?
I mean, everything I would say, I think, like you've pointed out, is not all that progressive, because there are things other teams and other managers have done for a while. But I guess if I'm trying to carry water for Joe Espada, I could point out his willingness to use Josh Hader in non-save situations. Although, it's a stretch, because there's other managers and other teams that have been willing to do this way before this year. But if you're trying to find the faintest signs of being progressive and thinking outside the normal box, or at least outside the box compared to what Dusty Baker was doing, I guess you could point to Josh Hader being used in non-save situations.
Yeah, still has the ninth, though, and they've been close situations. And the non-save opportunities, like, if he was only pitching in save opportunities, he'd have, like, what, three appearances?
Yeah.
So, like... Okay. Like, I appreciate you trying.
It's a stretch, admittedly.
I appreciate you trying there. 713-780-ESPN. Okay. Okay. This guy, loved the show. It's been hard to listen for 2 weeks. Both 97.5 and 92.5 have been almost all static near the Woodlands. Okay, we'll work on that. My bad.
Download the app.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going to be critical of you. We appreciate the feedback.
No, but you're just trying to help you out.
Yeah, other things, you can download the app, ESPN975.com. You can also download the Twitch, or we're on ESPN Houston on YouTube as well. So those are other options. We understand that that's frustrating. Apologize for that. But you can find us on the Twitch, search ESPN975. You can find us on YouTube, ESPN Houston. Download the app. The website's there, too. But we do apologize for the inconvenience. Astros lineup is out today.
You're not.
Someone's not in it?
Yeah, he's not in it.
Jose Abreu's not in the lineup. Jose Abreu squared up two baseballs yesterday for the first time. Like, if you're not going to play Jose Abreu today, DFA him. DFA him.
Yeah, baseball card.
Why is he not in the line? Here's the line. Now, Joe is trying to shake it up. He has moved things around. Jose Altuve leads it off. Alex Bregman bats second, ooh, plays third. Yordan Alvarez back into his three spot in left. Kyle Tucker, your cleanup man in right. Yiner DHs today, bats fifth. Pena in the sixth hole. Singleton bats seventh. Caratini catches, hits eighth. And Jake Myers, who homered yesterday against the lefties, back in center field against a righty, El Mauricio Dubon. Why is Jose Abreu not in the lineup today? Why is he not in the lineup today?
Because he's – I don't have the – they're platooning the guys?
You have two options.
I mean, that's the only thing I can think of, is he's just going to go every other game now with Singleton.
It's because he's starting to feel the pressure. He's starting to feel the pressure. Well, I better shake things up. He shook things up today. Yordan's in the three hole. Bregman's in the batting second. Singleton's in the lineup. You have two options. You either release Jose Abreu, which I'm in favor of, like, eat the money, this whole, like, sunk cost fallacy. You're holding on to him because you gave him all this money. Okay, like, I can understand the logic there. I don't agree with it, but I understand the logic. But if you're going to do that, you have to have him in the lineup whenever he finally squares up a couple of baseballs yesterday.
I completely agree. But here's the other thing that we talked about, because Dana started talking about it. Maybe there's a stint on the IL. Have him stub a toe. Have him do what exactly Javier did to get a crick in his neck and be able to sit him down, put him on the injured list for a while. But he doesn't. He's either going to be in the lineup when he starts looking like there's a chance, there's just a spark of a glimmer of hope that he could do something to square up a baseball 2 days in a row. But if you're not going to play him now, then sit him down. If you're not going to completely...
For good.
Right.
For good.
Well, but if you're not going to do it for good, he's already kind of hinted at the fact that maybe there's a stint on the IL for him while he figures things out. Well, I don't care what the damage is or where the discomfort is. Then at least sit him down and give a viable option, an extra viable option to this lineup right now when they so desperately need wins.
Yeah. I mean, I tweeted this out this morning because... If you're going to keep a struggling player, you have to run him back out there whenever he finally has some good contact. Mm-hmm. Like, this is actually anti-analytics. This is actually anti-progressiveness. Like, analytics and progressiveness, you're not falling in love with the hit column. You're looking at, okay, exit velo. You're looking, and I know that Dusty had the exit hits and all that stuff, but you're looking, but Dusty was, like, more analytical than he would lead on, because his gut feeling was, that guy's hitting the ball hard. He might have got a hit, but I'm going to put him in the lineup tomorrow because he's hitting the ball hard, which is like, you know, that's not analytics. It's kind of an old school feel, but it is also analytics because the guy's hitting the ball hard even though he doesn't get the hits. Like, the projection of Jose Abreu, whenever you look at those hits yesterday, like one of them was a 690 expected batting average on the hard lineup that you talked about earlier. One was like 350 and the other one was like 300. Like Jose Abreu yesterday deserved at least a hit. If one of those falls in, is Jose Abreu in the lineup today? Probably. So this is anti-progressiveness from Joe Espada. Well, the hit calm, he did get one to fall. He hit the ball hard twice. I'm going to bench the guy, but we're not going to release the guy. You got two choices. You play him when he's hitting the ball hard, or you send him away and pay him to sit on his couch.
Or, again, you put him on the injured list. You did it before.
Well, I mean, that's tricky. Because the Mets general manager 2 years ago, whenever you placed him on the injured list, if you're manipulating the injured list, you can lose draft picks. You can be kicked out of the league. You can be given a year suspension. Like, that's tricky.
But he's had a back problem previously.
Yeah, I mean,
so there's a track record.
They'd have to lay some groundwork.
But they got away with it last year. No one thought that he legitimately hurt it or hurt it even worse or did anything to his back 3 months into the season when all of a sudden they finally sat him down.
I mean, it's very easy, you're right, to sell the fact that a 45-year-old has back issues. It's very easy to sell that. You're 100% right. But it is tricky. Like, I mean, if Dana Brown's worried about his job and being suspended, like, it's you don't want to manipulate the injured list. The Mets GM a couple of years ago, I forget his name, he got in trouble for that. So that's a little bit tricky. Not that it would be that difficult to do. I just don't understand this lineup at all.
I mean, not only does it fly in the face of analytics, as you pointed out, Jeremy, I mean, he's actually barreling up baseballs. He's got a good exit velocity, and you sent him down
the
day after.
In the face of analytics, Joe Espada. Analytical manager spitting in the face of analytics.
But it also flies, like, because the idea is, to me, like, okay, maybe they're platooning, which is fine, because Jose Abreu sucks. I don't need him in the starting lineup every single day, even though I would want him today because he actually hit the ball yesterday. But the problem is, if it is a platoon, John Singleton hits much worse against righties than he does against lefties. I mean, I'm not even looking at his whole career, but just this year.
Whole career is the same.
Yeah, his whole career is the same. His OPS against lefties, 708. Yep. OPS against righties, 559.
Reverse splits.
Also explain this to me. If you're trying to stir things up and mix things up, why are you taking a guy hitting 203 and batting him second?
See, I actually like this move.
Is this your way of saying
he's between Altuve and...
Yeah, but is this also your way of saying stop swinging for the fences and this is one way to do it if I put you in the two hole looking for base hits?
Let's kick that around when we come back. 713-780-ESPN. Because this is actually something that I do like. Now, there's a lot of things today that do spit in the face of analytics from this progressive manager, Joe Espada. And it does beg the question. What would Dusty do? What would Dusty do to boost this club? 713-780-ESPN. Bregman being a part of that is in the discussion as well. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Guys, want to take a moment for one of our newest sponsors, Bull Shirts. Bull Shirts is the best in the business at doing promo items. I've known them for years in my past life with the Rockets because they do promotional t-shirts. They can do them quickly. They can do them spot on perfectly the way you need them, and they can get them to you fast because they're local. They've been in business for over 40 years. Industry leaders since 1980. Top-notch quality and service. The playoff and the championship gear for both of your two favorite teams in this town that play baseball and basketball. All done by them, and they can ship it anywhere in the United States. And it's not just t-shirts. You need koozies, cups, and mugs. Maybe you're doing a golf tournament. Hats, protective headwear. Maybe you're looking for golf accessories, awards and medals, coolers, lunch bags, backpacks. You name it, they've got it. They can hook you up. They can even do the things that you weren't thinking of. Maybe you need one of those tents with the logos on it. You need something done like an LED light-up product. They got that too. But the best is, they're local. They're going to take care of you, and they're going to get it to you fast. Bull Shirts is a one-stop shop for everything and all things promotional and all your promotional needs. Visit their website, bull-shirts.com, and tell them ESPN 97 and I sent you by because they're the best in the business.